Welcome back to Hour 2. Eb is still doing his belly dancing with the little cymbals. This is Hour 2 of Inside Track. Bruce and Eb here, along with producer Tom. We're broadcasting live from the Wilkinson Wealth Management Studios here at KVOI. We're sponsored by Essential Pest, Tucson Iron and Metal Retail, Perfection Auto Works, and the aforementioned Eb Wilkinson, who is our very adequate co-host.
Just thought you'd like that. Thank you so much.
All right. Our guest for the next several minutes until about 2:32, okay? We're doing this on Jesse Lugo time. We're with Jacobson.
Who are we with?
We're with Josh Jacobson with the Tucson Crime Free Coalition. How are you?
I am great.
Haven't had you here for a couple months. We figured we'd drag your body in here.
Yeah,
I've had an interesting day.
It's important so that you remember my name. It's great to see both of you gentlemen.
Attorney Jeff Jacobson. You guys, anyway, and you're much handsomer than Jeff Jacobson.
Thank you, Bruce.
He works out.
So, what is the newest in the Tucson Crime Free Coalition world? What's happening now?
Wow. Well, you know, we gave a presentation just yesterday. So it's this presentation that we've put together that we've done in the community. We've done it probably 45 times in the last 13 months. And we go and we give it to all kinds of different groups, Rotary clubs, church groups. Yesterday it was with a group of developers. And so we were talking about just that. What have we done in the last year? How has Tucson improved? And when you look at the streets of Tucson, I don't think that we can say that much has improved at all. And so that's a little bit it's a little bit stressful for us. Sometimes it gets frustrating. So we really have to focus on what we actually have done. And so just to remind everybody, Tucson Crime Free Coalition, we are a nonpartisan group. We operate without a budget for the last year. So one of the things that is new is we are now a 501c4. And we are going to start.
That's for education, right?
Yep, education. And you can also spend part of it on political payouts, so candidates, PACs, whatever that looks like. And so we're planning on ramping up our engagement in the community in a few different ways in this next cycle. We're going to be talking and running some of our own candidates. We've already identified people that are running in a couple of key positions.
Don't wait. You need
to start
now because the election is less than a year away.
It's less than a year away.
11 months away.
And I'm going to...
When do you announce those people?
Well, one of them I can already start talking about. Her name is Heather Lappin. She's running for sheriff. She's a Republican. She's very well qualified. She has a ton of experience. She's very well liked by her peers. And so I hope that at some point in the near future, you guys will have her on the show. She's just a great lady. And something.
She currently in law enforcement?
She is. She currently works for the Pima County Sheriff's Department. She's
has
a lieutenant.
Has she already been shunned?
That'll come shortly.
There has been some things that have gone on, but I will let her talk about that.
Yeah, we'll have Heather on sometime in January.
Yeah, please do. She's great. She's so qualified. And I'll tell you this is interesting about her. The night before we met with her for the first time, I got a phone call from deputies in Sierra Vista asking, you know, because I know these guys. I've been down there. I've worked.
Another good sheriff's office down there.
Daniels is amazing. Yeah. Sheriff Daniels. Commander Watkins, he actually came to one of our forums recently and gave an update. But the big thing is they called me from Sierra Vista and said, hey, we know that you're involved in Tucson and with candidates. You need to meet this lady, Heather Lappin. And I said, okay, well, tell me about, you know, this lieutenant from Pima County Sheriff's Department, Heather Lappin. And they just raved about her. And I said, well, guys, you know, the funny thing is we're meeting with her tomorrow and we're starting a conversation. So she's highly recommended. We're looking at candidates for the county attorney's office as well as other races. But those are the two areas that we've identified. And again, because we're nonpartisan, we can support candidates on both sides.
It doesn't mean that a Democrat isn't good on law enforcement.
Absolutely.
There are some good Democrats out there on law enforcement.
100%.
So let's talk about the crime tax.
Yes.
You've talked about it before. You were talking about it with these real estate developers and entrepreneurs yesterday. Mm-hmm. Explain for a developer, for a property owner, what that crime tax is and what all it involves.
Oh, great. So the crime tax, it actually affects everybody in our community.
Yeah.
And so if you look at it from the beginning, we look at what's going on the streets with low-level crimes, because we know that low-level crimes are, they're extremely underreported at this time. And so on a regular basis, business owners, property owners, and citizens, we're all dealing with higher costs, you know, with organized retail theft, average crime on the streets, which would be break-ins, vandalism. And so you have the repairs that go into that, but then you also have business owners and property owners that are having to put up fencing, camera systems, lighting, private security. One private security guard can easily run $80,000 a year. That's just for one private security guard.
And that covers about a six-hour shift.
That's exactly right. That's like a 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. shift. So these costs are enormous, and of course they're being passed on.
The nuisance crimes happen in the night.
The nuisance,
the violent crimes and the property crimes usually happen during the day itself, right?
Well, I think that from what we're seeing is that right now it's just happening around the clock.
Yeah.
There's just so much activity going on. But so what ends up happening is that all of these costs, they get passed through. They get passed through to the customer. They get passed through to commercial tenants.
Who pass it along to their customers as well.
100%. And so the way that the crime tax also impacts the average citizen is when you live in a high crime community, your rental insurance goes up, your homeowner's insurance, your car insurance, costs of goods. And
if you haven't checked, your auto insurance in Southern Arizona is way high compared with lots of places around the country because of all the car theft that goes on with our proximity to Mexico.
You're talking about the thefts in the stores. I was in San Diego on Thursday, and I had to stop by the CVS pharmacy to pick up some stuff that I had forgotten. Even the toothpaste is locked up, and you've got to push a button and have somebody come and get the toothpaste for you. There's literally nothing in that store that was not behind glass.
So there's a tax convenience-wise for you,
right?
But there's a tax on labor costs for the extra person that has to be answering the damn buzzer all the time.
Right. And the price was substantially higher. You know, forget gas prices, which were out of this roof. You know, thank God I get good mileage. I didn't fill up in California at all. But just the cost of goods in California was substantially higher than here in Tucson.
Yeah. And remember, Tucson is already an impoverished community. 19.8% of our community lives in poverty.
Right.
And so when we're looking at a community that is, frankly, it's not terribly welcoming to economic development when you have people looking at all the different places they can go, we can't lose those opportunities. And then just the people that are already in our community doing business that are paying higher costs, it's hitting everybody in the pocketbook on top of the inflation.
And yet you've got a mayor here in town that really doesn't give a fat rat's ass about that and allows this stuff to continue on.
You know, it was interesting.
She got a raise.
She got a raise.
Big raise.
Yeah, well, a lot to unpack in the last election with all of the incumbents winning by a huge margin as well as getting their raise. So for us,
they called the Arizona Daily Star called that race the Friday before the election with 243% of the votes cast.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's the way it worked out. So, you know, there's a lot of people in the community that feel like if they put, you know, their name or their money behind Prop 413, that they're going to get goodwill out of that. We'll see. TPOA, one of them, right? They supported the raise for mayor and council.
Before the city council.
Yeah, it was kind of a strange strategy, I think.
Lapdogs.
Yeah.
Very much so.
So, You mentioned talking to property developers, property owners just yesterday. You also talk with county officials and city officials. Are they listening? And if so, what has the positive reaction been, the positive outcomes that have come from those discussions?
Yeah, absolutely. So just to remind everybody, the Tucson Crime Free Coalition works very closely with county administration. County Administrator Jan Lesher is one of the big reasons that we even formed, because she was able to introduce myself to Kevin Daly. Kevin Daly has been in Tucson all of his life.
He got a promotion recently, I understand.
Yes, he's been a school board member for over 22 years, and a position came up on the school board for Flowing Wells, and Kevin was the ideal candidate. He was appointed there. Just an amazing guy that has done a lot for Flowing Wells. And by the way, Flowing Wells is one of the most impoverished school districts in town.
They're all landlocked.
And 88% of those kids live in poverty in the Flowing Wells area.
Wow.
It's brutal. So Jan Lesher has been great to work with. She actually basically gave us Deputy Administrator Steve Holmes. So the Tucson Crime Free Coalition steering leaders, we meet every week with Deputy Administrator Holmes.
So what's the positive outcomes that have been related to that new association?
Well, we were able to get the transition center open at the Pima County Jail. So
which is something you were working on for a while.
We worked on it for several months. And
talk about that.
Yeah. So as of now, what we saw, the dynamics going on in the Pima County Jail, is that when people go into jail, it's like a turnstile. They go in and then they're almost instantaneously released unless you're there for, you know, a severe violent felony. When they're released, they're released without any real support, treatment, detox, shelter options. So, of course, folks are going back to doing whatever got them there in the first place. They're going back to the encampments. They're going back to the lifestyle on the street, whatever it may be. So the whole idea behind the transition center was to create a building that now there's an actual sidewalk as people come out of pretrial services or the booking department. This sidewalk is fenced in. The only way you can get out is to come through the transition center, which is staffed with navigators. And navigators are individuals that have lived experience. They've either overcome addiction themselves, they've been through the prison system, and their whole job is to assess the individuals that are coming out, figure out what their issues are and what services they need to overcome. So two big things.
So they have no way out other than go through that gauntlet.
Yep. They have to go through there and they have to be exposed. So two big things that we're really tracking there. Number one, what is the recidivism rate of individuals that make contact with the navigators? Because
and prior, 27% of all of those arrestees repeat another crime within 30 days.
How'd you know that, Bruce? That's
because
exactly
I read
what
your
I was gonna
stuff,
say.
Man.
So that's a big thing. And then the next thing is the failure to appear for their next court date.
And that's at 70%.
That's at 70%.
I read that too.
Good. So what we can tell you with the early data, because the transition center has been open for about 3 months, we're still trying to ramp up with the people and the services coming through. So in the last 3 months, we've been able to take that 70% and reduce it by 10%.
Wow.
So there's been a 10% increase in people that are going to their next court date that make contact with navigators through the transition center.
So you also met with state legislators as well recently, mm-hmm. up in Casa Grande, some from Maricopa County, mm-hmm. some from the Southern Arizona area.
Yep.
Talk about that interaction and what you hope to get results from on that.
Okay, great. So what we've also learned in the process of opening up the transition centers, we've gotten really deep into Title 36.
What's that?
Title 36 relates to people that have severe mental illness, SMI. But what it does not talk about is how you handle people that have severe substance use disorder, SUDS. So under Title 36, we are trying to figure out a way if we can bolster Title 36 to include substance use disorder, or if we have to create a new ARS, which the whole point here is to be able to take folks, and if they have these severe issues that aren't getting better, they continue to break the law and commit crimes, prison or jail might not always be the best place for people. Treatment might actually be a better place. But the caveat there
is... Like a 28-day program or something more extensive?
Something more extensive, something longer, and something that would be custodial. Mm-hmm. So Arizona is only one of 15 states that does not allow for involuntary treatment options for people that have substance use disorder.
Hey, almost everybody that goes into treatment is here against their will. None of them wanted to go there.
Well, it's kind of funny,
even
though,
in the best cases.
Yeah. It's kind of funny, though. We actually look at it and we go, well, you know, maybe it's not necessarily involuntary, because if you're presented with the option to go to prison or jail for a long period of time, or you could go and you could be put in a custodial setting. So that means that people would not be able to get up and leave the treatment facility. They would have to stay there for a period of time, and that currently does not exist in Arizona. It exists in many other states.
So for this to happen, it's got to go through the state legislature.
That is correct.
The governor has to sign off on it.
She does.
What are the chances that'll happen?
Well, I think that there's, when we're talking about a pathway that is not packing the prison with people that really their biggest underlying issue is either mental illness or substance use disorder, because both of those they're really intertwined. When we went out and we did the pit count, just surveying, that's the point in time count when we surveyed the chronically unsheltered on the street, 80% of the individuals admitted to us that they had substance use disorder. Roughly 70% admitted to having severe mental illness. And that's the actual data for the entire...
Or they exhibited signs of serious mental illness, probably.
Right. So substance use disorder and SM and serious mental illness, they are absolutely intertwined. Yeah. So, you know, if we're creating a different setting that is still custodial, meaning you can't leave, rather than prison, I think a lot of people can get behind that. And we've talked to a lot of Democrats about it. And so far, people have been on board with that, you know. And the big issue that I want to talk about with our Republican friends, because civil liberties come into a big play here. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes when people go into treatment facilities, there is MAT involved. MAT stands for medically assisted treatment. That would be your Suboxone, your methadone. And so what we're also talking about in our legislation is that people would not have to participate in MAT programs if they did not want to.
And that's a problem because what?
Because if we say that you have to take Suboxone or methadone, that means you're putting another drug or chemical into your body to counteract.
A substitute.
Yeah, to counteract fentanyl or heroin or whatever it is. And interestingly enough, just a side note, methamphetamine is one of the only drugs that does not have a medically assisted treatment to combat it. That is one drug that you have to just sweat it out.
Wow.
And the reason I bring that up, and this is difficult, is because for the people trying to kick it, is because generally most of the people on the street, they're poly users. They'll use whatever you have. And meth and fentanyl are the two biggest drivers. So people can be getting treatment for fentanyl, but they still have the underlying effects of methamphetamine and the craving and the addiction. So they start using that again, and then that takes them right back in the fentanyl.
How expensive is meth right now? Because fentanyl's what, 50 cents a pill?
50 cents a pill. I can tell you that we watched a drug transaction in an encampment recently where a little baggie of meth was $10.
So tell us this, Josh. Has there been research done on the percentage of total crime in Tucson, mm-hmm. or Pima County, wherever the measurement exists, that comes directly from homeless people?
Well, so what we look at there is when we're looking at the chronically unsheltered or the chronically homeless, and just by the data from the point in time count, if 80% of those folks are saying that they have a substance use disorder, that pretty much tells the story. If you're using drugs, theoretically one fentanyl pill is a felony.
Well, but you know, offenders, you know, doing property crimes, doing crimes against persons and so on, is there any measurement of, you know, what percentage of those total crimes in Tucson or Pima County exist with, you know, with that population who is unhoused?
Yeah,
I'll use your term. That's not mine.
Yeah, the chronically unsheltered.
Okay. Well,
And we say that because there's a differentiation between people that are homeless versus chronically unsheltered.
Okay.
And
you're nicer than me.
Well, the fact of the matter behind the question that you're asking is there's a lot of data that is not tracked, and that is part of the data that we have not been able to get.
So that information isn't available.
No, it is not.
It should be.
As far as we know, it is not. And you're right.
It should be because it's a chronic perception. Even if it's not a fact, it's a chronic perception within the community, and it would be good to understand that. Charles Heller is waiting on the line with bated breath. Charles, you have a question or comment for Josh Jacobson.
Yeah, I stopped eating bait, though.
You stopped eating what?
If you're good, bait.
Bait, you said bated breath.
I stopped eating the bait.
You wormed your way out of that one.
I have is, yeah, right. If the person is mandated into substance abuse training, rehabilitation, does it have the same effect on their record as if they were sent for mental health against their treatment against will? And for the simple reason, it lets the and assumes reaches a state of equilibrium again in their life and they put their back together. If they've been mandated,
real quick, Charles, because you're breaking up and we're on.
We've got a minute and 30.
All right. What effect does it have on their future right to keep and bear arms?
Great question.
That is a really good question, and I don't know, Charles. That's gonna have to be played out a little bit further in the legislature and the bill writing process, and that's gonna be a detail that is gonna have to come from people smarter than me at this time.
Okay, Charles, you need to get a new flip phone, buddy.
Yeah,
one's having some problems. All kidding aside, Charles, great call. I appreciate that. So, real quick before we wrap up. The crimes in this town and this public safety issues in this town aren't just about violent crimes and things like that. It's traffic stuff as well.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
And the traffic statistics in 23 compared to 22 are worse than what they were. Talk about what Tucson Crime Free Coalition is doing on that.
Well, we are absolutely tracking the pedestrian fatalities. As many people know, last year our pedestrian fatalities nearly doubled, and that was a direct result of either fentanyl or methamphetamine being in people's systems when they go out and get hit. One of the big things that we really want to do that we were able to accomplish as a success in the county was get those signs on the medians that read, say no to panhandling, say yes to supporting agencies.
But they're all still there still. Every corner I'm on, it seems.
Because you're in the city, not
you're
the
in
county.
The city.
I'm seeing those signs in the county. So I've got a single wide up there on Colbin Sunrise. Yep. And I see that sign at, I don't see it at Colbin Sunrise. I do see it at Craycroft and Sunrise.
Yep. Yeah. And so what we really want is to get those signs up in the city of Tucson limits and try to get people off of the medians, try to get people out of the street. But realistically, unless we have officers that are able to make contact with folks and corral them back onto the sides of the roads or through the use of something like the transition center, where ultimately we hope to see a reduction in drug usage over a long period of time in Tucson, that's going to continue happening.
Well, Josh, for the remaining time, how do Inside Track listeners find out more and join the Tucson Crime Free Coalition?
TucsonCrimeFree.com. It's free. It's easy. Just go to TucsonCrimeFree.com. You'll be prompted to enter in your email address, or you can go to a link on the site that will take you to all of our newsletters, and you can read those on your own.
Thanks, Josh.
Thanks for coming in.
Stay healthy.
You.
Happy Christmas and New Year to you and all your Crime Free Coalition members. Let's take a quick break. Stay with us for a very special interview from Israel on the 10/7 Hamas war. We'll be right back. No channel flipping.
Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up with science.
You mean you don't use a shoe?
No, we use the latest in technology and innovation to eliminate bugs, termites, weeds, and more.
No spray cans and lighters?
None of that. Only solutions that target insect biology, using chemistry to help protect the environment, people, and their pets.
Huh. Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up. Call 886-3029 or visit essentialpest.com.
Can I help you?
Yes, I'm having some trouble.
Look, man, it's Christmas Eve and we're closed.
If you just listen to our story. You see, we've been traveling. Our car is about to die. My wife, Mary, is about to give birth and no one seems to get us in for car repair. Can you help us?
All right, go ahead. Pull your car forward. Here you go, Joseph. Just like new.
This is truly a miracle. It sounds like it's been reborn. How can we ever thank you? How much for this?
Hey, Merry Christmas.
God bless you, sir.
That's strange. There seems to be a bright light shining down on their car. Huh. Make this the best Christmas ever. Call Perfection Auto Works today at 323-8650. Embrace your family, your friends, and your mechanic. Merry Christmas from all of us at Perfection Auto Works. 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. Some people view market declines as a time to panic. Good news, that's wrong. Markets have never gone down and then failed to come back to create new highs, and this time it's not different. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call Eb Wilkinson at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
Welcome back to Inside Track. Yesterday, I had an exclusive interview with retired IDF General Amir Avivi on the latest developments in the 10-7 Hamas war. You won't hear this anywhere else. Take a listen.
Our next guest joins us from Israel for the next several minutes. Retired Israel Defense Forces Amir Avivi joins us during his distinguished service in the defense of the Jewish state. Amir Avivi held a series of senior roles in the IDF, including Deputy Comptroller of the Security Forces, Director of the Office of the Chief of Staff, Deputy Commander of the Gaza Division, Commander of the Sagi Division, Commander of the Battalion 605, and Commander of the School of Combat Engineering. Our guest is also a key partner in the ISDF, whose mission is on their website, and it states, "We are a Zionist security-based movement whose aim is to position Israel's security as the top national priority in a manner which ensures the sovereignty of the Jewish people in their homeland for generations to come." Welcome to Inside Track, General.
Yes. Hi. Glad to be here.
So we're doing this interview on Friday, November 1st, the day before the show actually airs. The pause is over, and there's been much talk here in America about a weak message given yesterday from Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, which some say green-lighted Hamas resumption of the hostilities. Today, the battle continues. Any thoughts on Mr. Blinken's comments and the bad faith of Hamas as the war now continues with still about 100 hostages being held?
Well, I think it was obvious that Hamas' strategy is to try to stop the war completely. They want to survive. They don't want to be destroyed. They were hoping that if they get a long ceasefire, which of course had a price because they had to release hostages, that the dynamics overall will be a big international pressure. Maybe only also the Israeli society feeling that, okay, that's it, you know, now it is quiet, maybe we should continue. But they didn't take in account how resolute the people of Israel are. And in this case, also the cabinet, the government in destroying Hamas. We don't see a big pressure from the international community. And at least as far as the administration, we have a green light from their part to destroy Hamas, not necessarily for the reasons that Israel wants to destroy them. I think that the way the administration looks at things, they want to destroy Hamas in order to promote a two-state solution and a retreat from Judea and Samaria, from the West Bank, which will bring Gaza on steroids to the West Bank. It's not something Israel is going to agree to. And I think Israel is not even going to agree to bring the Palestinian Authority to Gaza, which is also an entity that promotes the complete annihilation of Israel. But at least we all agree that we need to destroy Hamas. And this is exactly what the state of Israel intends to do. And it will take time. It's not easy.
The ISDF website describes...
IDSF, Israel's Defense and Security Force.
I'm sorry, you're correct. Describes the work done by your group as the following. We are a group of 16,000 reserve officers and operatives from all branches of the Israeli security forces dedicated to guiding the narrative of Israel's national security needs and ensuring that Israel's security in the homeland of the Jewish people is never taken for granted. Tell our audience what all that entails.
Well, I can say, you know, I served 30 years in the army and retired as a brigadier general. And I saw in these 30 years so many follies, so many bad decisions that brought Israel to a really complicated situation, talking about its national security situation. And also, I've seen for a long time a decline in Zionistic values, in educating Zionism. And for me and for all the officers who joined the organization, national security is first and foremost about national values. It's about patriotism. It's about Zionism. It's about connection to who we are as Jews and to our land. Without spirit, there is no tank and airplane that can help. So when I retired, I felt there is a big need to build up a grassroots movement that is also coupled by, I would say, think tank capabilities in order to educate the young generation, the general public, and decision makers about what is needed to secure Israel for generations to come. We are an organization that has a very, very good sense of reality, very professional. And I can say that 2 years ago, we put on the government's desk a national security assessment, 300 pages, that were presented to all security leaders and also the government and the prime minister, describing exactly what's going on now. We said there's going to be a war. There is no deterrence. There won't be an alert. And we have to prepare the army and the people for war. And we said to the government, you have only two choices. It's either going to be a six-day war scenario where we will be proactive and attack first, or this is going to be a Yom Kippur scenario. And it will be in a complete surprise. And we called for a preemptive attack on Gaza. We knew where this was going. We talked about it a lot. We interviewed about that a lot. These interviews can be seen also on our website and social media. But unfortunately, Israel, talking about our politicians and what was going on with the society, was in a complete mess. Five elections, discussions about things that I guess people are looking at it now and said, what did we fight for, you know, which committee will choose judges? It's unbelievable. And we were, you know, we knew where this is going. And now everybody is saying, guys, you know, you were right. And now, by the way, after months of fighting, now we're more than 20,000, not 16,000, 20,000. And it's growing very, very fast because people are really starting to understand. We need to first and foremost secure our land and people, and we have to be united as a nation, connected to our values, and with a realistic, point of view, talking about what is needed in order to win.
So if you could, I'll kind of detract a little bit from the outline that I prepared. You are somebody who sees a lot in Israel and talks to a lot of people. Is the commitment to get this job done with Hamas, is it as strong today as it was a month or so ago when first attacks started in Gaza?
Well, I think we have no choice. I mean, if you don't eradicate Hamas, the citizens of the South are not going home. They are not going to live in a place where they will be endangered by this murderous terror organization. So I don't think the government has a lot of choices. We really need to destroy completely this organization. And not only that, the government also put a goal that says We will never let this organization or any terror organization build up its forces again in Gaza. And this means that in the very long term, Israel will need to be on the Egyptian border that connects Gaza and Egypt, and also will need a full freedom of operation for the IDF everywhere in Gaza, just as we have today in Judea and Samaria. And this is a complete change in reality, where basically we need to conquer Gaza and be responsible. We have overriding responsibility talking about security. This is before we talk about what civil solutions there are for self-management of the Palestinians. We need to be in Gaza in order to prevent any buildup of terror again in this area.
You think that the Israeli public is committed to the same goal as well?
I think the Israeli public is more committed than the government. Mm. I mean, the Israeli public is completely united in the understanding that we need to destroy Hamas. Everybody also wants to bring all the hostages. That's also clear.
Right.
And I think that because the hostages are in the Gaza Strip and we are going to take over the whole Gaza Strip, eventually we'll arrive to hold the hostages and hopefully manage to rescue as many of them alive. It's not easy. It's very complicated operationally, but it can be done. And we need to do it.
General, one of your assignments was commanding a combat engineering group in the IDF. What role do you think combat engineers are playing in the Gaza war right now to help win that war and to not just eliminate Hamas, but to save hostages?
In the IDF, we say that the artillery is the queen of the battle. Today, the kings are the combat engineers.
I know. I thought you would say that.
Yeah. I think this is due to the fact that we are dealing with huge underground infrastructure, all these tunnels, and it's the combat engineers who need to detect them, find them, and also destroy them. We're dealing with huge amounts of improvised explosive devices on the roads, in the houses, booby traps, combat engineers need to clear the road, destroy all this infrastructure, explode many headquarters and munitions. And this is why this core has been growing steadily. I can tell you that in the Second World War in Germany, everything is mathematical in the German army. They said for every 10 tanks, you need one combat engineer APC. The combat engineers corps in Israel today is bigger than the armored forces. We have more combat engineers than tanks. The one thing that everybody is seeking in Gaza now is armored bulldozers.
Right.
So the army is actually, as we are speaking, the army is buying like 200 more. There is a real need for combat engineers, and I think that following this war, this corps is even going to grow much more than it is, and it is a big corps. The armored bulldozer is a solution for almost for any thing on the ground you need. So,
well, I just got done reading Victor Davis Hanson's book on the Second World Wars. And he talked a great deal about combat engineers and that being one of the key reasons that we're able to win so many battles there. So the pause has restarted. It's ended. The fighting has started back again. What new challenges does the IDF have in the upcoming days, given Hamas' ability to reload, rearm, redirect, and so on? In this past week or so?
So obviously there will be a price for letting Hamas regroup, letting Hamas learn lessons. I mean, at the beginning when we were attacking, we were able to learn very fast from day to day and improve steadily in past lessons learned. While Hamas was completely confused, lost a chain of command, and therefore they were not able to regroup, to understand what's going on, to learn. And in combat, it's very crucial who learns faster.
Right.
Now, the moment we stopped maneuvering and spent these days with the hostages, which obviously it's also an important mission, this gave Hamas time to talk to each other, to regroup, to equip, and so on. And this means that now that the IDF will start the maneuver, it will be harder. And this requires massive, massive support of the Air Force, artillery, tanks. We have to be very aggressive. And the challenge is to do it in a very professional way while trying still to minimize civilian casualties. And this is why we're trying to move them from war zone to designated areas where we feel they can be safer.
And that designated evacuation sort of instructions, that still exists today as the fighting has resumed. Israel, the IDF, is taking special efforts to make sure that as few civilian casualties are created by the fighting. Is that correct?
Yeah, of course. We allocated inside Gaza an area which is actually the area of Gush Katif where our settlements were. Well, we're asking the Palestinian civilians to go to this area, which is a safety zone. And this will enable us to operate more freely in the south of Gaza when we start maneuvering south. At the moment, we have some strongholds in the north, which we didn't deal with because we stopped the war. We have Jibalia, we have Sajaiya, Zaytun, a few neighborhoods we need to clean up, and there are strongholds of Hamas there. So it will take time. It will take a few months to take over the whole Gaza Strip.
General, what final message do you have for our listeners today? We have to wrap it up. What final message do you have for our listeners in our local Jewish community and the greater community who do support the future security of Israel?
So it's important to understand this is not a local war between Israel and Hamas. This is a regional and global war between the West and the rising Russian, Iranian, Chinese front that has emerged in the last year, especially in the Middle East. And Hamas is just the beginning. We have to really dismantle this whole Shia axis, Hezbollah, Houthis in Yemen, militias in Iraq and Iran itself. And for this, there is a need for a coalition and we need American leadership. We saw Biden took a long time to this administration to realize that they need to build an alliance. And in the last few months, they started pushing the peace with Saudi Arabia, which is very, very important. It's not just about the Saudis. It's about building a coalition. So we need to go back to this track, but we need America to be strong and pose a credible military threat on Iran and its proxies and be willing to also attack if needed. We need to dismantle this axis. If we don't do that, this will endanger the whole West. This is not just about Israel. So I'm hoping to see leadership coming from the White House.
General Amir Avivi, thank you for joining us today. Godspeed to you and your family and to all the brave men and women who are fighting in this effort. Tell our listeners very quickly how they can follow and learn more about you and the organization that you are part of.
So we in IDSF, we have a very, very strong website with a lot of content which we upload every day, idsf.org.il. And I invite everybody to subscribe. We do every day a briefing that usually I start for a few minutes, and then we bring other specialists, and we really cover all aspects of war. Most of our officers, by the way, are now on the field, fighting, commanding, in the Southern Command, the Northern Command. Central Command, we have a very, very good understanding every day of what's going on. We speak regularly with the Prime Minister and the Minister of Defense. And so we're really able to explain and give an understanding of where this war is going and how we view it in the next coming days and weeks.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
So that's retired IDF General Amir Avivi on his report up to date as of yesterday. The fighting continues in Israel right now with Hamas. And as we go further along in this effort to eliminate Hamas influence in the Middle East and the work that Israel's doing to make that happen, we'll bring the general back. He is very, very much plugged in. The IDSF.org. Go to that website. There is a wealth of information that you're going to find there. It's a great organization, and he's quite a remarkable soldier. And what he talked about, combat engineering, there's probably been no recent war that has occurred where combat engineering is not a major factor. In this one, because of all the underground tunnels and encampments that they have, it's even more important here. And this general understands it as well as anybody. Josh Jacobson is still here with us, and we've been talking a little bit more about the situation with crime. Let's just kind of wrap up real quick, because we have about 4 minutes left right now. Just go back and talk about pedestrians, vehicular problems, the increase in all these deaths that we've had over the past year, over 2020.
Yeah, well, it's as we've seen, the numbers just keep spiking, and it goes even beyond just the, you know, people walking out into the road. We've got lots of issues with the street racing. You know, TPD is working really hard to combat that. You know, even some of my staff have gone out and observed it and told me about it. So the bottom line is when you don't have enough officers on the street and you're not doing community policing, this is what happens. Crime just continues.
So the city council just gave themselves, or voters gave themselves, a $500,000 a year increase in salary. Mm-hmm. How many cops would that have bought?
Yeah, I mean, or not even just police officers. What about the equipment that's needed? You know, there's so many needs by TPD right now. And unless our mayor and council start taking that seriously and put the bare essentials of what a community needs to be successful in front of them rather than the pet projects, Tucson is going to get worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, there are some times when I say to myself, do these people running the city council, are they accidentally allowing Tucson to fall into this third world sort of an environment, or is it actually their agenda to allow that to happen?
It's deliberate.
What are your thoughts?
You know, it's really hard to think about why somebody would intentionally destroy a city, but we're watching it happen across the country, aren't we? Yep. I mean, Tucson is not much different than a lot of other Democrat-run cities. But
how many cops are we short right now, do you think?
Well, it's a good question. I haven't seen that. I know that a lot of people want to get police officers.
We can't get a fixed number of how many sworn officers there actually is.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, you know, it depends on who you talk to. Right. I mean, we talk to the frontline officers that will say that their roles are still, you know, under 300 officers on the street. But what I will say is that Chief Kazmar is doing a good job with recruiting. He is turning that around. It's going to be a slow climb. But it does seem like they are recruiting.
We saw what happened
officers.
In Scottsdale recently in Phoenix, where they offered a significant signing bonuses and increase in salaries, mm-hmm. and boom, they got a big bump up in police staff joining.
So money is one thing, but also morale is the other thing. And when you have bosses that aren't, and when I say bosses, I mean mayor and council, that don't have your back, that don't believe in what you're doing, that is really bad on morale. And what we hear from officers all the time is they want to be able to do their job, and they're being held back right now.
Josh Jacobson, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Hey, that's going to do it for us here on Inside Track today. Thanks again to all the great guests today. Tune in next week when we have another great show for you, ready to remember Pearl Harbor and the USS Arizona. Please check out our own Facebook and Twitter accounts for the latest news and our views on the news. All of our Inside Track episodes are available at Apple Podcasts and the KVOI website. And until next week, this is Eb Wilkinson.
And Bruce Ash.
And
Josh Jacobson.
Josh Jacobson, wishing you a very great weekend. Please join us again in 166 hours.
Viva Los Gatos.
Customers come first at Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus.
What other kind of customers do you have?
So our biggest customers are actually like ranchers and people from outside of the Tucson area. They're buying a lot of square tubing. They're buying a lot of stuff for their ranch to close off fences.
We'll sell anything from 10 feet to 10,000 feet to somebody that comes in because we have new steel and surplus steel from steel mills. The reason we're able to get such good pricing on some of this stuff is, A, we sell scrap to the mill. So we have a relationship there, and then we can buy material, what they're making, bringing it back. And so we save on freight, and we have relationships for years with them. So I think that's really our niche market. We'll sell whatever you need.
Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. Call 209-1579. Stop by the yard, 701 East 36th Street. Open Monday through Saturday.
Long ago, my grandfather told me,
I was asleep on the night before Christmas. I heard a noise. Who are you?
The ghost of carburetors past.
Ghost of humbug.
Silence, Ebenezer, or I'll backfire on you.
I hate backfiring carburetors. What do you want?
You must rescue us and all our computerized, fuel-injected progeny from Quirky Loop on the corner, Ebenezer Emery.
But how?
Do a free 26-point inspection, Ebenezer.
Okay, so my grandfather's secret is out. Merry Christmas, everybody, and come get your car work done at Perfection Auto Works, 323-8650. That's 323-8650, and PerfectionAutoWorks.com.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.